magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends Eli, Jerry, and Mike most of the time. Come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what's up? You're listening to the Touch Arcade Show. This is episode number 382, recording on Friday, December 28th. And this is a very special episode of the Touch Arcade Show for two reasons. The first of which is because this week's episode is sponsored by Simile Paint Like a Master, which is available now on the App Store. You can find out more information by going to savethemachine.com. And we'll have some more info in, about the halfway point of the show. Second reason is this is our Game of the Year discussion podcast. This is the very first time you've downloaded the Touch Arcade Show or listened to our podcast. We put on a weekly show where we recap the news of the week, talk about some games and other stuff going on. If you're watching the video version of the podcast, which is embedded into the website this time around, this is what you usually get if you back us on Patreon. Video quality is subpar this time around because the AirPlay utility I use got updated, and of course I can't update backwards and it's kind of messed up. So apologies in advance for that, but really appreciate everyone sticking through the Touch Arcade Show this year. If you've been a regular listener, if not, hope you subscribe to us on iTunes. If you like this podcast, please give us a rating. If you want to email us for any reason, it's podcast@toucharcade.com. And the two ways you can support this podcast as well as the website itself is by going to patreon.com/toucharcade or doing your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. With that out of the way, we have our... By the time you're listening to this, our top 100 games of the year will be posted. And actually, the game of this will go up with the Game of the Year post, so it already will be revealed by the time you're listening to this. But we've got our short list of picks down to 10, which are Battleheart 2, Donut County, Florence, Grim Valor, Monster Hunter Stories, Odmar, Old School RuneScape, Suzy Cube, The Room, Old Sins, and Wonder Blade. And those are just in alphabetical order. No reason beyond that. So before, when we've done this before, we've kind of done frame the podcast around, like, we already picked the game of the year and posted it. And, we discussed, like, why we picked what we ended up picking. And this time around, we haven't really decided on anything other than the shortlist. So we should be an interesting...
I feel like that's how we sussed it out last year, and I think it came out pretty well because I don't know, you get to kind of see our thought process behind why we're picking the game of the year and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, and I feel like you can make strong arguments for any of these 10 games, which is why they are all in consideration. So, why don't we hop right into Battleheart 2? I'm not sure how time on this episode, like, if we're going to be running very long, we're going to be running very short because we don't have a news segment. So yeah. We'll just break around half hour, read the ad copy, and kind of see where we are. So let's hop into Battleheart 2, which this game came out earlier this year, right? I don't remember.
July, I want
to say. July-ish, yeah. So the Battleheart games, I feel like, have quite a pedigree around the Touch Arcade community. Like, the Mika Mobile, in a general sense, has is a beloved developer. Battleheart, the original one, kind of like blew all of our minds when it originally came out years ago now.
Yeah.
And Battleheart basically left everyone saying, like, wow, this is really great, but I wish there was more to it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is where Battleheart Legacy, right, is the subtitle of the next one?
The next one, yeah.
Yeah, so that kind of took the Battleheart formula with one character, and a lot of people are like, oh, this is really cool, but, you know, I like the bigger kind of party management aspect that Battleheart has. So Battleheart 2 came out, and basically just made more of the same with a lot more depth, I guess, than the original Battleheart. Does it seem fair?
Yeah, it's kind of like I feel like nobody really expected the original Battleheart to be as popular as it was, or sort of as influential as it was. And so I look at Battleheart 2 as sort of like the developers being able to make the game the ultimate version of Battleheart that they really envisioned in the beginning. When you have sort of like the hindsight and knowledge of releasing the game previously and seeing what the feedback was and stuff like that. And because it really at its heart feels a lot like the original game. But it has a lot of really interesting, you know, new aspects, and it just feels like an overall sort of more polished version of that first game. But it definitely has sort of like the same sort of soul as that first game too.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like I really, really like this game. Played it a ton when it first came out. I don't really remember the complaints people had with it. I feel like there was like
one?
Something that people didn't like about it, but it seemed pretty minor.
Yeah, nothing's really coming to my mind either. I think, I don't know. I guess you could argue that you want more like classes to mess around with and stuff like that. But those did eventually, they did add a few in updates, if I recall.
Yeah.
And
it was kind of, I was a little surprised that they released this as a premium game, because I feel like this game would be just like ripe for all sorts of freemium shenanigans with like paying to unlock characters or other things like that. So that is a pretty cool aspect of this. So if you never played Battleheart before, I guess we should explain how it works. So you have a party of four dudes. Each of them has a primary ability. Like, for instance, my warrior guy is kind of like a tank guy, just does melee strikes. And I've got an assassin dude that does more damage, but is a little bit squishier. And then I've got a mage in my party, and then also a healer. So by just dragging the characters to whatever action you want them to do is how you kind of trigger that. So like, for instance, for the healer, I just drag a line from her down to like my knight guy, and she starts healing him. And that's kind of how attacks work and everything else. And like, each character also has a special ability that is on a cooldown that, you know, like for instance, the healer does like a group heal kind of thing. So really cool game. And what I think is so neat about this is that it's really hard to play while I'm talking about it. What's so neat about it is it like allows you to effectively manage like an entire MMORPG party without too much trouble. And again, it's easier than I'm making it look. If you're watching the video version, it's hard to talk and think about
the little
at the same time.
The line drawing combat, if you will, was copied all over the place in a million different games after the first Battleheart came out.
Oh yeah,
and
for sure.
I still think it's such a smart control mechanic for a game like this. And although things can get a little hectic, and you know, sometimes maybe you miss, you know, pick the wrong person or something like that. For the most part, it's like pretty crazy how much control you have over a whole party of people kind of all at the same time, and how much you can kind of manage the chaos of all the different enemies that are attacking you and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just really cool.
It's neat too, like the boss mechanics are like straight out of like MMORPGs too, where you've got stuff to like you can't stand in, like bosses that do cleave attacks, and like you got to be cognizant of like where all you guys are standing and like when you're using your super abilities and like all sorts of other stuff like that. So nothing but good things to say about Battleheart. I guess like my argument as to why I wouldn't give this game of the year, if we have to like devil's advocate, why we don't like it, is that it is kind of samey with the original one.
I think all the Battleheart games really are sort of like they're sort of like RPG jukeboxes for people. So the fun is, I mean, yeah, you can beat the campaign and beat all the story levels and stuff like that, and that's not really going to take you too much, you know, too long to do or give you too much of a challenge. But I think the fun in these games is really like picking the different classes, making different parties out of different class members, and kind of like screwing around with stuff like that and seeing what you can do, and sort of like experimenting with those types of things more than anything. So, yeah, you're definitely going to like replay all these battles a million times or whatever, and if that sort of thing doesn't sound appealing to you, then maybe this game's not for you. Maybe you like a more traditional RPG where it's like you just beat the thing and then you're done with it. This I feel like is more like built for experimenting and playing over and over again in different ways, just for sort of like the fun of it.
But that's like another kind of neat thing about it, though, is that you know, like you can come up with really crazy party combinations that, like, maybe you do a ton of damage, but, like, you know, you just, like, can't fight a boss because you don't have a single dude that is capable of, like, tanking or doing any damage, or, like, you know, you find, like, really silly synergies amongst, like, the different super abilities and stuff like that, which, I don't know, it's really cool. I don't know, I like this game a lot, so it's hard to think of too many things to say about it. Bad things to say then. So moving on, let's go to Donut County, our next game in the alphabetical list. This game is published by Annapurna. It is, I think the interesting drama surrounding this game that maybe you're not aware of is that they demoed it at a bunch of different places. We saw it at PAX first, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And it's, if you're watching the video version, the artifacting is not the game. It's like the way that I'm piping the game's display into my computer. So a bunch of people saw this, and you know, there were a bunch of videos out and stuff like that. And then I think it was Ketchup, right? Released Hole.io.
Voodoo.
Oh, Voodoo. Which like almost completely aped the mechanic of the game, which amounts to like... It's kind of like if you took like Katamari Damacy, but instead of rolling up a ball, you're like creating a ever expanding hole that's absorbing larger and larger things.
Yeah,
I guess. Until you start swallowing, like, you know, just tiny little things, and then you're swallowing entire houses or other things like that. And it's got a really silly storyline to it. That kind of also sort of gives me like Katamari vibes and stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't know. And it's one of those games too that really seems to play best on touch, and like the I think releasing it on it's out on like everything, like, right? Like Steam and I think the Switch too, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, it's on Switch now, and I'm pretty sure Steam, and yeah. I've never played it with controls, like a controller. I feel like that would be weird.
Yeah, I mean, I fiddled with it I think they had it played with a mouse at PAX, and it was cool. But it just is. It's one of those games that, like, if this was released in 2011 or 2012 or whatever, it would have been like a mobile exclusive thing that everyone would be losing their mind over.
Right.
Instead of it releasing like everywhere else and then coming to mobile.
Yeah.
Which kind of like gives us this like weird, like, you know, do you call this game a port? Does it matter that it's a port?
Yeah.
I don't really know. Like it's a really good game, but for game of the year kind of stuff, I think that we both kind of like lean more towards, you know, like mobile exclusive stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's really a weird sort of
situation
to have to deal with. Yeah, like, because there's so many good games that are just ports that also sometimes feel best on mobile, and sometimes the mobile version is the best version. And so it's hard to be like, well, do you knock this because, I mean, it's not the case with Donut County, but we've had games before that came out a couple years ago on like desktop, but then the mobile version comes out and it's like one of the best games on mobile that year. And so do you do like a couple-year-old game that's just new to mobile as a game of the year, like, which I feel like, I don't know. I feel like it's hard to pick something like that over something that's truly brand new and truly sort of made for mobile, you know, specifically.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. You know, the timing of this game is fine. I mean, like, it, you know, it's not that kind of situation. Like, last year, Civ 6 was a good example of, like, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was like... You know, if that game came out on mobile first, it would have been like, you know, holy shit, like life as I know it is changed.
Yeah.
Right. But it's less exciting getting a PC port
That's but I also wonder, I don't know much about the development of this one, but I wonder if it was envisioned as like a mobile game first and foremost. And then just because of the way things are now, you can't really release a game mobile first anymore. You have to kind of go to all the other platforms first. So it's sort of makes me wonder if this like wasn't actually envisioned as a mobile game because it plays like one, you know, yeah. What I mean, it plays like it was designed for mobile.
I mean, like moving the hole around the screen, like using your finger, just like makes sense. I mean, this feels yeah. like the way that the game was designed to be played.
Right.
Right. So I don't know. It's a weird situation,
but I do love this game. And, I think the biggest criticisms I've heard from people, which I find are kind of silly, but one of them is that the game is too short, which it's short, but I mean, I feel like it's long enough. I don't know. Sometimes games are too long. Yeah. But I also, a lot of people complained about like the cutscenes and the story and stuff, which I actually feel like is one of its strengths compared to like a copycat game like Hole.io. I feel like this is a game that has like heart and sort of all the characters and the personality of it is one of its selling points besides, you know, yeah, swallowing stuff up in a hole is awesome, but you sort of play this game to play through it and experience all that story stuff, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of, like me personally, I prefer game experiences that are just like really tight and short and well done that you just are like, finished with that you can be like, man, that was good, all right, I'm gonna play something else now.
Yeah.
Because like I finally beat Red Dead Redemption 2, which I mean, when did that game even come out, like a month or two ago, just because like it's so hard to find time to play these games that are just, you know, like,
yeah,
that you play for 100 hours or whatever versus like I think the main campaign of this is like 4 hours or something like that.
Yeah,
which is like cool. I can like really enjoy this game over an afternoon, have a great time with it, and then, you know, be super happy that I played it and then tell all my friends about it, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, I think we've come to a weird point in the world of video games where people demand a lot for their dollar. And so game developers kind of feel like they have to offer you like hundreds of hours of stuff if you're going to be paying $60 for like a console or PC game, which I don't know. To me personally, I'd rather pay $60 for any length of game as long as it's super good from start to finish and doesn't feel padded,
right,
or any of that sort of stuff. And I feel like this is a game that's just as long as it needs to be, which is perfect. You could have thrown in a bunch of weird levels where you just swallow stuff for no real reason, or even maybe some sort of random survival mode or something, which I wouldn't be mad at all, but it feels unnecessary. I think that this game is exactly long as it needs to be to sort of tell its story, which is sort of the main point.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of that, I replayed Katamari Damacy on the Switch when that remake or port or whatever you want to call it came out. And I forgot how short that game was. Like I beat it in a day.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, that actually was just really good. Like I'm glad I got to revisit that, and I'm glad it's over. Right. And like, I feel really good now. And
yeah,
I don't know. I think that's kind of cool. So Donut County, really good game. To sum up, I think everyone should play it, but it's got that kind of like tinge of questionable, like, is this a mobile first game? Like, should that win, you know, a huge award being a port? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that. So next up is Florence, which is also from Annapurna. This game is a little on the weird side, I think, because I think you could make equal arguments that this is a game and it isn't a game.
Right.
Right? Which I think is kind of interesting because it's a it's kind of like a narrative. It's like an interactive comic book, I think, is the best way to look at it. It's like when you imagine the comic books of the future, This is it to me.
Yeah.
In that, you know, like little actions happen and you got to like diddle around on screen and kind of do stuff to, you know, make the story progress, I guess.
Yeah. My feelings about this is it's very much an interactive story, but I feel like I haven't really seen any that do stuff with its gaming parts that Florence does so well. So, you know, what I mean by that is, like, I feel like a lot of interactive stories or whatever that are made in game engines or made on game platforms tend to kind of throw game mechanics in just so that it's a game instead of just being an interactive story or whatever. And with Florence, I feel like the gamey parts are really good at sort of making the different scenes in the game impactful. And it's the quality varies. I mean, some things are sort of silly, but some things are really, really powerful. And you probably wouldn't have the same reaction of just reading, you know, something or watching something happen in front of you as you would a part, you know, taking part in it happening.
Yeah.
And sort of getting like that feeling, it sort of hits home.
Yeah. And I think that one of the coolest moments in the game that is, stuff that's portrayed really well using kind of like the game engine is when Florence and the dude whose name is escaping right now are like arguing, and so you go through this whole curve where you know you meet this guy and the game has you like doing conversation with him, and like after you break the ice, like you do all these like kind of like sliding puzzle pieces together to complete the conversation, and like you can tell that over time, like it's getting easier and easier to talk to this person because like it gets to the point where like the puzzle pieces like aren't even puzzle pieces anymore.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
like the same happens kind of like in reverse when you get to an argument, which I don't know. Yeah. I thought that was super clever.
Yeah. There was a part that stuck out to me is when you're dating for a while and you move in with each other and you're going through the apartment and there's this sort of interactive thing where you're sort of placing your possessions amongst his possessions
and
sort of blending the two together. And it's sort of like, I mean, that's how it is when you move in with another person, is you're sort of like combining your lives together or whatever. And then the flip side of that is you do almost the exact opposite when you're breaking up and the relationship's over and you're moving out and you're kind of like taking these objects off the shelves that you had, you know, had kind of blended together earlier in the story. And I thought that really hit home pretty hard. It's like little things like that.
I like the part two in this where, like, during the move-in section when you're like, there's only so much room on the shelf, right? And it's like, all right, well, like, I guess my Gundam figurine doesn't make the cut, you know?
Right.
Stays in the box kind of thing, which, I don't know, I thought was pretty neat.
Yeah.
So...
But this is it won't take you long to play through this. It's like an hour, I think. And if you've been in a serious relationship, or especially if you've broken up from someone from a serious relationship, then there's a lot about this game that's going to like kind of hit home with you.
Right.
And I think that's why it's so critically acclaimed, is because it's very relatable in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And it's very sweet. And it just tells a really cool interesting story, and it's just relatable to a lot of different aspects of everyone's lives, I would say.
Yeah. It's a really good game.
It's just
and like
awesome.
after you beat it, you can go back and play individual chapters or just like start a new game or whatever else, and the music's really good. And I don't know, as an experience, it's awesome. Kind of cut off the video portion because I don't know, I don't want to spoil. I mean, it's a game that you could watch on YouTube and you know, get, I don't know, it's not to the same extent as like a game like that, Dragon Cancer, where it's like, all right, I watched someone play it, I don't need to see it at all ever again.
I think it's worth playing through yourself, but you got to know what you're getting into beforehand, because if you're like, I don't know, expecting like a super gamey game or even just like a puzzle game, like the game portions aren't super challenging. They're really more built to kind of make you feel things about the story.
Yeah.
And so knowing that going in, I think you're going to love this thing. But if you didn't know that and you're like, everyone's talking about this Florence, this great new mobile game, let me try it. You might be taken off guard and be like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, see, that's why I think it's a hard pill to swallow for like it's a really good game. And I would say it's one of the better games of the year. But I feel like a game of the year, like actual, like real game of the year nod, like you can't be like, all right, this is the best game of the year. But you need to be like in the mood for this. And it's kind of an experience thing. And like, you know.
There's a lot of caveats.
A lot of caveats to that. Yeah. So, I don't know. Very, very, very cool game, though, that I think everyone should check out regardless, though. Next up on our list is Grim Valor, which I'm pretty sure both of us love this game.
Yeah, man. So this is from the people that made Sortigo back in like 2012, I want to say. And Sortigo is sort of like the go-to recommendation when someone asks for like a good original Metroidvania on mobile. And it's a really good game, has a really sort of like kind of amateurish art style that a lot of people didn't like, but the game itself pretty much universally everyone liked. And it's also not an overly long or overly complicated Metroidvania. It's definitely on the lighter side of things, but it's not, it's, you know, still really enjoyable and a good challenge and a lot of fun. And so they've kept that game updated and maintained over the years, and so it still remained kind of like a really good recommendation for a good Metroidvania platformer. And so earlier this year, we learned that those guys had kind of teamed up with some friends and sort of beefed up their team to make a new studio that were making like a spiritual successor to Sortigo, and that's what Grim Valor is. So it's basically a same sort of like sort of like light platforming Metroidvania, but with a heavy Dark Souls inspiration in terms of like the thematics and the combat and stuff. And it's just so good. It's so good. Like, I feel like it sounds good on paper, but it's even better than it sounds.
Yeah, it really is. I don't know. I like everything about this. And, you know, I saw a lot of people kind of like slamming the art style as kind of amateurish, but like, I don't know. I could kind of, there's like a certain charm to, you know, like an obvious indie game, right? And I don't think that means it's like shitty or anything. It's just like, you know, they didn't buy all their assets from the Unity Asset Store, and, you know, it doesn't look like absolutely every other game that, you know, is out that's made by a small team. Kind of like, I mean, I guess it's not a great example, but those different like car driving games that, you know, get dumped onto the App Store all the time, where it's like, you know, people downloading the same like dozen free car models on the Unity Asset Store and like dumping them into a game. Like, you kind of notice like a lot of similar stuff, and like, this is all seems like it's you know, like baked from home, which
it's definitely a huge step up from where Sortigo was at. And the combat, I think, is like sort of the biggest draw to this game, because it's just so intelligently designed around like touch controls and keeping things simple without like having them be overly simple. Like, there's still a lot of complexity and a lot of strategy to the combat once you sort of learn it, that it makes it really fun to just sort of like beat up on enemies to the point that it's not, you know, it doesn't hurt to go back and like play through previous levels and stuff like that, just because it's fun to take on like hordes of enemies or bosses and stuff.
I don't have too many things to say about this game that isn't super positive, aside from like, I wish that it had a control scheme that wasn't just a ton of virtual buttons. But I don't know how hard of a time you can give them for that, because I don't know if this game would be any better if it had like, you know, wacky swipe controls or something like that.
That's true. It's interesting though, because this is a game that, since it's come out, you've seen people that normally are like, every mobile game is shit, but this Grim Valor thing is actually pretty sick. Even wins over the real gamers.
Which I think takes a pretty special game to do that. So yeah, I don't know. It's I'm fighting the very first boss right now, which involves a lot of kind of like using your dash mechanic to allow you to evade attacks and stuff, which is pretty cool. And
yeah, the combat is so fluid.
You're actually supposed to die on this first boss, though, right?
Like, you can beat it. It is possible, and people have done it, although I have not. And I think you're treated to sort of a little Easter eggy thing if you do. You are pretty.
That's the one of the only thing that kind of gets my goat about this game, is that's just a personal pet peeve of mine, is like the initial like unbeatable boss that you're like, oh, am I supposed to beat this? This is bullshit. Like, I'm getting killed. Like, what's supposed to happen? And it's like, oh, it doesn't matter. So,
but yeah, this game's just badass. I think everyone should play this one.
Grim Valor is Absolutely outstanding. So let's take a quick minute to get a word in from our sponsor, who, as we mentioned at the top of the show, is the new game Simile Paint Like a Master, which you can find more info as well as app store links and all that stuff by going to savethemachine.com. So here's their ad copy for the week. Think you don't have artistic talent? Think you can only draw stick figures? Think again. Simile Paint Like a Master is a game that will help you create amazing portraits, landscapes, and still lifes with just your fingertips. It uses a simple technique pioneered in ancient Egypt and mastered by Da Vinci, Van Gogh, and Escher. What's more, Simile is multiplayer capable, so bring in the new year with friends and make a masterpiece together. Simile Paint Like a Master is free to download from the iOS App Store and works on all iPhones and iPads with iOS 11 or higher. Visit SaveTheMachine.com for more information. Which, it's a really cool. We talked about last week. They were also a sponsor last week. Really cool idea for a game. I dig it.
Yeah.
So check that out. Again, SaveTheMachine.com. Either one word or with hyphens in between. They both work, which is...
Take your pick.
Kind of cool. all right, so next up on our Game of the Year consideration list is Monster Hunter Stories. So you're going to need to walk me through this one because I am a Monster Hunter idiot, and I played quite a bit of this when it came out because everyone was talking about it, but I have not yet seen the Matrix on what makes... I don't know. I've just never been able to get to a Monster Hunter game. It's like one of those things that I keep buying them and I keep trying.
Yeah. You know, that's a good point, and that's... I think this game was designed for those people because... I'm the same way. Like I've played Monster Hunter back on the PSP when it was super popular, tried to get into it, played the one that came out on iOS, which I think was a port of that PSP one.
Yeah.
And, same thing, like it's just really a tough nut to crack if you're not really willing to, learn a whole bunch of complex, crazy stuff. And, not everybody's really interested in doing that on, you know, as a mobile game. And so, I feel like the Monster Hunter series is considered like a really difficult to get into for your average person. And so Monster Hunter Stories, I think, was designed as a solution to that. It's more or less like a sort of like a baby's first Monster Hunter, I guess you could say. But I feel like that's doing it a disservice because it's not like a lesser game. It's just a very different game. And it's a lot more accessible to people because it's more along the lines of like a traditional RPG and also very heavily styled after like the Pokemon games.
Yeah. And this game is fairly expensive too, right? Isn't it $20 or something?
It's $20. Yeah. And this is also a really good example of what we were talking about earlier because this game came out on 3DS I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago or something like that. And was a great 3DS game. Everyone really loved it.
Was this the Monster Hunter game that launched with the new 3DS that has the better processor and the little analog joystick?
It might be. I would have to double check on that. But
you remember when they made the faster 3DS? But I don't remember what it was branded. But
yeah, there was only a handful of games that you needed to have that to run it, and this might have been one of them. I don't really remember. But so the interesting thing about that though is that the 3DS. Looks really dated. I mean, I love my 3DS, but it's the visuals on it have never been that great compared to what else is out there. You know what I mean? And so it was a decent looking 3DS game for the time. But then when they brought it to iOS, everything's actually running all in high resolution. And it looks like they cleaned a ton of stuff up. And so this is really the definitive version of that 3DS game. And so it's also begs the question of well, do you consider this a game of the year, even though it's like a 4 or 5 year old 3DS game?
But the best version of that 3DS game? Yeah, it's an interesting question.
The best version, I think it plays the best on touchscreen, and it obviously looks the best. And so, yeah, it's kind of like one of those weird things. But so anyway, this game, to me, like I said, I've never really been into Monster Hunter games, and I also don't typically get into RPGs too often either. But every once in a while I'll get into one and I'll get super heavy into it. And the fun in this game is really seeking out new monsters and kind of collecting the new monsters and then upgrading them and battling. And it's the kind of game that there's a main storyline you can follow along with, but you could easily spend hundreds of hours just like collecting and upgrading and battling because it's just so much fun. And ignore all the main storyline stuff for as long as you want it. So I think that's really cool too, is that kind of like a Grand Theft Auto game or something like that. Like sometimes you feel like following the main story and beating stuff, and sometimes you feel like just goofing off and doing things, you know, side stuff. And this game is really good for that.
Yeah, but, I mean, that alone is pretty rare on iOS. You know, it seems like, you know, Crescent Moon has released some RPGs that have like a decent amount of like side stuff you could do, but definitely not like the same, like, oh, do you just want to, you know, get out of the tutorial and completely ignore the story? All right, well, you have hundreds of hours of junk you can do.
Right, yeah.
Kind of thing, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, and so this game is just massive. Tons and tons and tons of content. Like if you were looking for a game that's going to last you a long time, don't hesitate to spend the money on this one.
I just I've never been the kind of person that, and this kind of goes back to what I was saying about like donut counting, is I've never been the kind of person, and I know there's people out there that do that, and if this is you, like that's cool, but like there's people that look at games as like, you know, hours played divided by dollars spent.
Yeah, totally.
Or I guess the other way around, but and I don't know, like I'm just not the kind of person that is going to put hundreds of hours into a game.
Right.
Unless it's an MMO, not that I haven't, you know.
Unless it's Stardew Valley.
MMORPGs and Stardew Valley and,
yeah,
you know, other stuff like that I'm super into. But I don't know, but this is really cool. And, you know, it's really awesome that Capcom released this as a, you know, real deal premium game. No shenanigans, like a real price point and everything else, because...
Well, the way it's structured is like the way you collect items and craft stuff and upgrade your monsters and stuff. Like they could have rejiggered this into the most free to play game ever.
That's what I was
and I
say.
Think they could have done it in a way that wasn't even like that gross. It just would have been a very much one of those games that gets you so hooked that you end up spending a lot of money over the course of, you know, time.
Yeah. I mean, they could have had a similar monetization pattern to like Pocket Morty's, which isn't bad. Yeah. Or any of those other kind of style of games where, you know, it's fine. You can ignore the monetization stuff, but, you know, it's cool that you don't need to deal with that.
Well, this is the kind of game where it's like, okay, you want to fill out your roster. You want to collect all the monsters. That's cool. And you can do so. And the only currency you need to spend is your own time, you know, trying to find those different monsters. Because it is, you know, you hatch these eggs and it's sort of a gotcha thing. You don't know what you're going to get until it hatches and stuff like that. And so, I mean, that's right there. I mean, it's like the basis of a super free-to-play game.
Yeah.
But it's not. And so really all you're doing is if you want to go that route and you want to collect everything and upgrade everything, you're just going to be spending your time, you know, grinding and hoping for the best and stuff, as opposed to, like, fast-tracking your way with money spent or whatever.
Yeah. So I guess that's a good thing to say about this one other than, you know, it's not a super iOS-y original.
Yeah. I think it's such a good game, though. It's surprised me how much it became one of my favorite games of the year, because I don't generally like these games and I don't really play Pokemon games or RPGs. And this is somehow a weird Pokemon influenced RPG that I just got super hooked onto.
Yeah. I mean, like sometimes that all it takes is like, you know, a theme or you know, something that like really suits your fancy. And then it's like, oh, cool. Like this is exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of see that with like the million different like match three games and stuff like that is, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I think if this game came out this year and it was just built for mobile and that's it, I feel like it would be no question be my pick for game of the year.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving right along. Next game up, we've got Odmar, which this is made in part by the same people that did Leo's Fortune and the Dark Nebula games and stuff like that, which, and again, if you're watching the video, like it looks amazing on the iPad. It's just like capturing weird on my computer. So apologies in advance. But this is made by people that have like serious high quality mobile game chops.
Yeah.
Behind him. And
Leo's Fortune is still one of the best platformers there are.
Yeah. And what's cool about Leo's Fortune is like that game kind of did like the reverse of what a lot of games do these days, which is like, you know, like, all right, let's release it absolutely everywhere and then dump it out on mobile and just soak up whatever money might be left. Whereas like that got released on mobile first and then like got released on like PlayStation and a bunch of other stuff. And the game is so good that it like still holds up. Which sort of in a way makes it a little baffling that they didn't like release Odmar everywhere else and then mobile, because like the animations in this game are seriously just bananas. I mean, like, if you, if we were in a different time period and they like launched this as like a, I don't know, like original PlayStation game or Dreamcast game or, you know, anything else like that before you started seeing like all these super high quality indie games selling for, you know, like a couple bucks on Steam or whatever. This would have been a $60 launch title that people would have gotten super stoked about all day long. And instead it's like, you know, just kind of another iOS game that it almost seems like people forgot about, which is kind of mind blowing to me.
Well, I think even in terms of like games nowadays, this is a game that you wouldn't question being worth 20 or 30 bucks on Steam or like the Nintendo Switch or something like that. And you would just look at it as like, oh, cool, another really high quality platformer, which is like a super popular genre nowadays, especially with like indie developers. And so the fact that it's a made for mobile platformer with these types of, you know, production values, it just still kind of blows my mind. And the other cool thing, which is something that you were just talking about with Grim Valor, is that they did design a really cool touchscreen control system where you swipe to jump, you swipe down to kind of butt stomp, and you just tap to attack. And, you know, the different actions in the game are all feel very native to the touchscreen in terms of being like swipes and stuff like that. And if you want, you can turn on just a virtual button stuff and play it that way too, and it's totally fine. But it's surprising where if you give the swiping stuff a chance, how natural it starts to feel, and then you're just making your way through the game without even thinking about it, just swiping and butt stomping and attacking and stuff.
Yeah, it's really cool. A lot of content in the game. You know, this game to me reminds me of kind of like Apple's sort of like catchphrase, and that like they're always looking to surprise and delight.
Yeah.
You know, which I would describe a lot of this game as surprising and delightful.
Yeah. And the animated cutscenes and stuff are like so professionally done, and it could easily be like a legit like cartoon franchise or something. You know what I mean? Like the voiceover, the narrator's voiceover work is super solid, and everything is like a 10 in this game to me, like production value wise, and even gameplay wise. Like there's some really, really inventive levels, and it's probably not the most challenging game if you're just trying to play through to beat it, but it does a really good job of adding like some additional goals to every level. So, you know, you might need to find these hidden tokens, or you might need to beat a level under a certain amount of time to get a certain medal, or some of the levels have like this sort of alternate reality, this dream sequence level to play through, and you get a medal for beating that or whatever. And so if you're just going to play through it, it maybe is not the most challenging game in the world, but to actually go back and get every goal will take you some time, and it adds a lot of replay value to it too. And it's kind of funny because I'm actually in the midst of playing through the original Rayman from PlayStation right now, and there's so many similarities between Odmar and Rayman, and that's one of them too, where Rayman's really built to like, okay, you know, play through the game and beat a level, but then come back later after you've gotten maybe some different powers or something like that, and kind of collect all the widgets and whatnot. And so it has a lot of replay value from that, which I think is really similar to how Odmar is. But I don't know. The story is just charming as hell, and it's just a super fun game. It's like a put a smile on your face kind of game.
Yeah.
And just controls beautifully, and native touchscreen controls I think are great. Like, I can't think of really anything negative to say about this one.
No, I mean, the only negative things I can think of to say is I wish the game would have done better, because it seemed like it came out and no one really cared, and
Yeah, it's strange. Like, I feel like when we first posted the trailer, a lot of people were like, holy shit, look at that trailer. Look at the animations. Like, it just looked amazing. And then it felt like it came out, and maybe people were excited for like a minute, but yeah, you don't really hear anyone talking about this game anymore, which I feel like is kind of a shame. This is such a showpiece sort of game for mobile that it should definitely be getting more attention.
Yeah. So yeah, Odmar, real, real good. Let's skip on to next game I have on my list is Old School RuneScape, and I don't know. I wanted to include this one just for the sake of discussion because, like, I feel like they're doing stuff that's like really cool and important here for the future of. Jared Sucks is not available.
Oh, you probably named me that when we played this last time.
Last time.
Yeah.
I need to come up with a better name. I don't know. Anyway, it's RuneScape is an old game. You can see a bunch of different videos of it if you're watching this. But so what I like about old school RuneScape is that I feel like for the longest time we like looked for. I'm not sure why it says like every display name. Someone is definitely not named Hodaps with two S's.
Add 69 to it.
I don't know if you can have numbers. Oh, there we go. Hodaps with 2 S is available. Anyway, I feel like for the longest time we've been like really hoping for like a real deal MMO experience on mobile. And to some extent, I'm in the tutorial island right now. I'm just going to wander around so people can see what the game looks like instead of doing the actual tutorial part. Well, I guess I kind of have to. To some extent, like, you know, the MMO stuff was kind of realized with Order and Chaos series, right? Where it was kind of like World of Warcraft-y. But I don't know. It was like so freaking free to play that like the game came out and was cool. And then like they released Order and Chaos 2 right away. So it was like, you know, everything that you had done before was kind of smoked out, you know, because you had to do it again in the second one, which was ultra, ultra free to play and, you know, everything else like that. So I don't know. It always kind of left a bad taste in my mouth because it was, you know, first of all, it was a Game Loft thing, which, God, it's like making me go through like the world's biggest text tutorial. The Game Lofty kind of stuff always kind of put a bad taste in my mouth because it was like such a knockoff of World of Warcraft that it was really hard to get into because of that. And I don't know, with how everyone got burnt switching to Order and Chaos 2, that made me like even happier that I never got involved. But what's neat about old school RuneScape is that it's a complete like cross-platform game experience. Like this is an active game world that I'm in right now that has been going since I want to say 2013 or something like that. It's been out for a while. That, you know, it's completely cross-platform. So like I can log out here and log in on my computer and be in the exact same spot and everything else and be good to go. And, you know, the same thing is said for like an Android tablet or you know, hop back in over to my phone or whatever I want to do. And I just think that's really cool. And old school RuneScape is going to be a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow because it is a very, very hardcore game that you really have to want to play to get into. But I just think like that kind of like cross-platform tech is where everything is heading. And we're kind of like seeing that with Fortnite and you know, other stuff like that, and that it doesn't matter where you actually choose to play a game as long as you're choosing to play it. Like the game comes to the platform that you want to play it on, and kind of like not vice versa, which I don't know. I think is really neat. Like it would be really hard to give this game like Game of the Year because you know, the same, man, the video on this is just like bananas, how artifacted it is in old school RuneScape for some reason. Again, this is just the capture equipment I'm using, not the game itself. You're watching the video, but I don't know. I just, it needs like some kind of like really special nod for like the work that they did in this game.
Yeah. I agree. And I think it's pretty crazy. And it's not like there's a ton of options out there for full blown MMOs on mobile, but I like the idea of your device just being a window into the game. The game is something that lives somewhere else. You know what I mean?
Right.
And whatever window you decide to use to play that is totally a viable way to play. And that's kind of feels like to me the way it should be.
Right. No, I completely agree. So old school RuneScape, I give it its highest marks for what they're doing. I think everyone should check it out, but I don't know. It's hard to recommend everyone play RuneScape because
I would go through and they posted all those like how to play newbie videos or whatever. I think that would be a good thing for people that aren't quite sure to go through and watch all those tutorial videos and kind of get an idea of what the game is like.
Yeah.
Because I think that helps a lot. If you just buy it or just download it and start playing, you're going to be like overwhelmed.
Yeah, no, exactly. So a game that's the complete opposite of that is Suzy Cube.
Yeah.
Which I feel like it's hard to come up with a game that is has been more anticipated and followed inside of the TouchArcade community.
Yeah.
Like this game, I feel like we saw it like 3 or 4 GDCs in a row, right?
We did. Yeah.
And it's just really, it's really good. It's really cool. The developer behind it is great. He's got what I've considered like one of the best developer blogs that I've ever seen. When it comes to like just unbelievable amounts of granular detail on, like everything that went into making this game.
Yeah.
From like, you know, weird little things like level design to, like how the actual like physics mechanics work with like, you know, jumping and platforms and all this other stuff to, I don't know. I mean, like you name it, dude got into it.
It's really crazy. So this was, this game got sparked off because he just loved Super Mario 3D Land on the 3DS and was just sort of like amazed at how effortless the camera work was, so that you never had to think about it. And as somebody that replayed Mario 64 not too long ago, the camera is just atrocious in that game. It makes for so many difficult moments.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and so it's like you don't really appreciate how far we've come with stuff like that until you go back and play those original games. And so,
well, the crazy thing too with Mario 64 is that like when that came out, it was like, oh my God, like they solved it. How did they solve?
It was mind-blowing, yeah.
They solved 3D cameras. And now you look at it and it's like, yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah, no, totally. And so you go back and you play something like that now and it gives you a real appreciation for where we've come. And so I think it was interesting that he just was so taken by how finely crafted Mario 3D Land was. He wanted to kind of get to the nuts and bolts of why. And so he sort of started developing his own 3D platformer and wanted to be able to craft it with that same sort of love and care in terms of like the camera work and the controls and movement, so that you never had to like stop and think about it. It was just, you could focus on playing the game.
Yeah.
And I think he totally nailed it. I mean, it took however many years for this game to actually come out, but I mean, you can really see the sort of like love that went into making every little detail of this game so that it works as well as it does. And if you go and you play, you know, there's a million platformers on mobile, but there's not that many 3D platformers. And so if you go play some of the ones that are out there, you'll instantly notice that the movement feels off, or it's hard to kind of judge where you're at in the 3D world, or that the camera sucks and is always putting you in an awkward view or whatever. And like playing the old Mario 64, playing those games makes you really appreciate how much they nailed it with Suzy Cube.
Yeah. And what's cool is that like if you follow the developer blog that I was talking about, like all the stuff that he does that like makes like all the things that, like you just take for granted in the game playing it and being like, oh wow, yeah, this is really easy to play and everything else, like the amount of stuff that's going on behind the scenes to like make that a reality is kind of bananas.
It really is.
Because you notice, like, you rarely miss jumps and rarely fall off stuff because, like, the game is actually kind of transparently assisting you to make sure that like that kind of shit's not happening, which is really sort of bananas, like particularly when you go and look back to like some of the like early sort of Game Loft puzzle game or Game Loft platformers where it was like, all right, here you go, here's a platform, oh, you fell off again, you know, like.
Well, it just goes to show that it's not enough to just have a 3D engine, and even if you make great art and cool-looking levels and stuff like that, if you don't really pay attention to the details and some of the stuff that's not apparent to the player, then you can have a really crappy experience.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is a really cool game. I guess, like, I don't know, if you want to come up with something bad to say about it, it's that, like, it's a little kind of on the nose with, you know, being a Mario kind of game.
Yeah.
I think that's fine. You know,
it's I think like, the nice thing about it is that design-wise, it's very heavily inspired, but it's in no way trying to be like, oh, well, there's no Mario on mobile, so I'm just going to like make a sort of facsimile of that or whatever. Yeah. It's not trying to do that at all. It's very much wears its inspiration on its sleeve, but manages to be its own thing, and it's totally original, you know, level designs and stuff like that. So I feel like it's pretty acceptable.
Yeah. So Suzy Cube's really good. I mean, we talked about it so much on the site and on the podcast and everything else and through different GDC coverage and all that stuff that I would find to be very hard to believe that anyone that is a Touch Arcade follower would not already have this game. But if you somehow fall into that category, I would definitely solve that problem ASAP.
Yes.
So that's Suzy Cube. Moving on to The Room Old Sins, which is another Unity game that is not cooperating with my capture setup, which is cool. But anyway, so The Room series has been around for ages now. Can you even guess the year that the first Room game came out?
I want to say it's 2011. It might have been 2012.
It might even be older than that.
It might be,
So the original Room game came out, and It kind of blew everyone's mind because it was from an era of where it was still possible to like come out with these games that were just like really good touchscreen experiences.
Yeah.
That you were just like, holy shit. Like, you know, it's like you're interacting with this object in the real world.
Yeah.
You know, through all the different like little puzzle boxes and all that kind of stuff. So I would say the Room series is about, I guess, you know, with Infinity Blade gone, it's pretty much as close as you can get to, I don't know, like the notion of like a system seller, I would say, maybe.
Which is
really good. And you know, this latest Room game kind of just sort of expands what's going on in the Room universe, which actually has, it's sort of interesting how, the very first game, people were like, man, this has like no story. It just ends. Like, what the hell? To a game that has like tons of story in its own universe and like all this kind of like lore and characters and all sorts of other stuff like that. Which is, I don't know, just really cool. I guess if it's hard for me to continue to get super excited about Room games though, because like, they've all been sort of samey in a way, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because it's like a really good, a really good game formula, I guess. But, it definitely feels like,
It's kind of like, I mean, people don't get sick of jigsaw puzzles once they've put one together. You know what I mean? They want to buy a new one and do a new one and it's a new challenge or whatever.
But I guess like what I'm getting at is like, you don't like lose your mind over going to the store and getting another jigsaw puzzle.
Right.
You're just like, hey, I actually really like jigsaw puzzles and I'm totally going to play another one.
It doesn't have the same sort of impact as it did, you know, back when it first came out.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, to go back to kind of like the Infinity Blade comparison, like by the time the third one came out, we were also kind of in a similar spot with that too, where it's like, all right, I mean, like, the Infinity Blade games are really good. And like, here's another 5-star review because like these games are good. And, you know,
the old ones are 5 stars and this one is more, but, and also better. So,
So I don't know. It really puts it in a weird spot because like, if you had this game in a vacuum and you know, like you play, you know, shit like, you know, Candy Crush and other kind of like, ketchup junk or whatever else, like you would look at this and it would just absolutely blow your mind, right?
Yeah.
So we're kind of jaded from that respect, I guess.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to look at something like The Room, and a lot of the knock against mobile games is like, oh, the touchscreen sucks for controlling. I need an actual controller. And I understand that, and I think that's true to a certain extent, like especially with just traditional games that try to use virtual buttons. A lot of people have trouble with platformers or first-person shooters or things like that. But then you look at something like this, and you're like, okay, like technically you could play it with a mouse, or you could play it with analog sticks and manipulate the object and click buttons to, like, you know, interact with it or whatever. But you're losing so much by not having that touchscreen to do all that stuff with. And that brings like this weird personal element to these games that is you can't experience in any other way except with a touchscreen like this. And it's just there's nothing really like actually like moving and manipulating objects with your actual fingers to where it's an experience that's like easily the best on mobile and probably couldn't be the same on any other platform.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I really like the Rube games, but I don't know. I wish they didn't quite feel so samey.
Yeah.
You know, like, cause after you play a few of them, it's like, all right, like let me twirl around this box till I find, like, you know, the little secret thing, and then, like, you know, click this over here, and then I need to find this key, so let me look for, like, where the keyhole goes, and, like, I don't know what to do next, so let me use, like, the little timepiece or the eyepiece thing, because that'll probably reveal something secret.
Yeah, you sort of understand the formula.
Yeah. So, I don't know. But again, you know, it's not like you would say Infinity Blade 3 is a shitty game, because it's, like, the other Infinity Blade game, so it's just, I don't know, weird situation. So, the last game we've got on our list, and I honestly cannot believe how we're making time with this. It's almost like going to be perfectly over an hour. last game is Wonder Blade, which, man, the response to this that this game got kind of like blew my mind.
Yeah.
With regards to like how split the reaction was on it.
Well, I mean, so obviously, anybody that's played Castle Crashers will look at this game and be like, holy crap, that's a really similar art style. They really kind of take a lot of the same ideas from Castle Crashers and use them in this game and whatever. And I don't know. I guess I personally don't care about that, but I could see how some people can take issue with that and whatever. But I think the important thing is to note is that it's not like somebody stole the code to Castle Crashers and then just like released it on mobile, like we've seen with other games, you know, in the past. It really feels more like somebody really loved that Castle Crashers style of game and wanted to make their own. And they wanted to make one that works really well on mobile. And that's exactly what Wonder Blade is. Like, it's super remarkable, you know, going back to talking about a virtual button setup, how well these virtual buttons work in this game, to the point where it doesn't really feel like you need to have a controller to be in control or to, you know, play the game properly.
Yeah. So if you never played Castle Crashers, it's worth mentioning that it's I think it launched on Xbox Live Arcade, if I recall correctly, but
yeah, like in 2008, something like that.
Yeah, so it's a it also has four player co-op, right?
That was kind of the selling feature of Castle Crashers.
So it was kind of like a four-player couch co-op sort of side-scrolling beat-em-up thing that really just had pretty incredible art and animations to it.
Yeah.
And Wonder Blade checks all those boxes. I mean, like, I think it's totally fair to describe this as, like, this is the Castle Crashers of mobile.
Yeah, for sure. It does take a lot of cues from that. But like I said, it's still an original game, and it feels more like somebody was just nuts about Castle Crashers wanting to make their own version of that rather than like copy it for nefarious purposes or whatever. but I think when you put all that stuff aside and you just look at the game for what it is, it's super duper just nonstop fun. And I can't really find anybody, even the detractors that played it, that were like, yeah, this game works really well and it's super fun. Even if that whole, you know, Castle Crashers element annoys you, it's still hard to deny that this is just not a fun as hell game.
Yeah. What I like about this game, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, is like my favorite kind of puzzle games, because I'm kind of an idiot at when it comes to puzzle games, is like the ones that make you feel like you're doing really good when you know, with like particle effects or like other junk like that, when like in actuality, like maybe you're just doing all right.
Right.
You know, through like and if anyone remembers like the Neo Geo magical drop games, like I feel like they're the best example of this, where it's like really not doing anything like that special, but it's like all your matches are like doing these like ascending chimes, and you got like particle effects like crazy and like all that stuff. And this is like, much like Castle Crashers, is the kind of like beat 'em up equivalent of that. And that like you're not doing a whole lot, but you know, like the numbers are exploding from all the guys, you're getting a ridiculous combo, your guy's doing all these crazy animations and swinging his sword around and doing all these jumps and all this other stuff. And that just makes it feel really, really fun. My actual kind of semi-pedantic knock against this game is that I wish you could somehow, and maybe you can, but I just have never figured out how, is download like a higher resolution texture pack. Because I typically play a lot of my games on my iPad. And like when you're playing this on a bigger screen, the texture resolution of like all the different like drawn elements is kind of on the lower side.
Oh, really?
And it's a little noticeable.
I can't remember if this iPad support might have been something they added afterwards. I don't remember.
You might be right on that.
I only play this on my phone, so I've never actually noticed that.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just kind of, you know, a little complaint. It's not like I'm going to be like, oh, don't buy that game because it's not super amazing on iPad. But like, you know, the reason it sucks is because like so much of the game is like all these amazing animations, and for, it kind of reminds me of like watching a DVD on your HDTV. I don't know, this is still fine, I'm watching this movie or whatever, but like knowing what like a super crisp, like for instance, like Battleheart 2, like that's a game that's like ultra crisp on the Retina display. And so going back and forth between those two games is like,
it's just noticeable.
I wish this looked better. Which you know, it is what it is.
But yeah, I remember when this game came out and it was just like super little fanfare, just kind of showed up on our forums and people started losing their mind over it. And I was like, what is this about? And I downloaded it and I started playing and I was like, holy crap, I haven't played a game this fun in a long time.
Well, so that is actually the weird response this game had when it launched was why I thought it was like a ripoff or something. Because like usually when you download a game like this and it's like, oh my God, like these animations are bananas, like this game's super fun, like everything else, like you... And no one's talking about it. You have to be like really careful, because like there's been times before where like that's happened and then you check into it and it's like, oh, this person just like completely stole this game. That's why it's so good, is because like they literally uploaded like a pirated ripped copy of this other game.
So
it was really bizarre when that kind of turned out to not be the case with this.
Well, the cool thing about this game too is I'm pretty sure it was largely like one or two dudes that just sort of had been working on this for a couple of years, and so it definitely has that sort of passion project kind of feel to it too.
So I don't know, I could sit here and play Wonder Blade for hours. So
I know, watching you play it makes me want to play it right now. That's always a sign of a good game.
This game's really, really good. So with that, we hit on all 10 of our games, kind of hit the pluses and minuses of a bunch of them. So any that we can, so I would say let's put RuneScape kind of near the bottom, because I just wanted that in there to talk about it, because I think it's cool. I feel like for me it's gonna be, and I'm just moving these around, it's not permanent or anything, but I think that Florence for me is going to be a hard one to be like, oh yeah, this is it, chief.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, you know? And same can kind of be said for the room Old Sins.
Yeah.
And the rest of them, I don't know. I feel like you can make a strong argument for a lot of these.
Yeah. I would say, as much as I love it, we could probably move Monster Hunter Stories out of there, just because the fact that it's technically an old game from another platform, which puts it in a weird spot, but it's still fantastic. Talking about like mobile exclusive games, I think Audemars and Suzy Q, Wonder Blade, Grim Valor would be like my top fours.
Audemars.
And then Battleheart. Man, this is always so hard because Battleheart's so awesome too. And then Donut County. Like, I feel like you can make such a good argument for that game because it plays so well on touchscreen. But I don't know. I don't know if I as much as I love it, calling it Game of the Year doesn't feel right.
Which, Battleheart 2 or Donut County?
Both, actually.
Yeah, I mean, like, the original Battleheart, I feel like you make a real strong argument for in its day. But right. Battleheart 2 being kind of like a very good, more of the same,
yeah,
is a little hard for me to really get behind, which kind of leaves us Wonder Blade, Grim Valor, Suzy Cube, and Audemars.
The other question I would say is, you know, do you take into account kind of like accessibility, I guess you could call it, as like, you know, a game that would appeal to the widest audience possible? Because something like Wonder Blade maybe might not be in there, or even something like Grim Valor, I feel like maybe doesn't have super massive appeal outside of people that are like really into, like Grim Valor is a little bit hardcore. I would say for just your average person, whereas something like Audemars, I think anybody could really pick that up. And as long as they know what a platformer is, they could make their way through it and enjoy it. And kind of same with Suzy Cube.
Yeah. I could see those arguments making a lot of sense. I mean, I feel like you could make the same argument for Wonder Blade to some extent as for Suzy Cube. I mean, like they're both super accessible, but I do wish the iPad version of Wonder Blade was better.
Yeah.
So I don't know about that, but
if you were going to take that into account, I actually feel like Donut County probably has super mass appeal.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Donut County for me is kind of like meh because it's launched on mobile last.
Okay.
So I don't know. I really like Audemars. Like Audemars would be my number one.
Yeah.
And my number two, I could kind of flip a coin between Suzy Cube and Grim Valor.
Yeah. Are we going to do runners up?
Well, yeah. So I wanted to include, it smells like something died in my basement just now.
Uh-oh.
The dog fart. what I want to do is like game of the year, a runner up, and then like just include everything else in the honorable mentions.
Okay.
Just for fun. And then be like, you can listen to the podcast if you have questions.
Okay. So we both think Audemars top game of the year contender?
I would definitely feel very good about Audemars as game of the year.
I can't think of anything bad about it. It's mobile exclusive game. It's got production values that are like above anything else on this list, as far as I'm concerned. And I feel like it could easily be one of the top games of the year on any other platform. So the fact that it's an actual mobile game makes it pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
A concerningly bad smell in my face.
Do you need to go figure that out?
No, it's be fine. It's like one of those things is like, who did what and why?
Yeah.
But anyway, so I'm super stoked with Audemars as game of the year. Like, I feel like you can make a real strong argument all day on that one. And I don't know, like I could see, like, so you make the argument with Grim Valor and that like it's really cool because you know, it's old school developers that have made like another really good Metroidvania game, which everyone really likes Metroidvania. The combat's really good.
Yeah.
I do kind of wish that the controls like didn't have kind of like the same, like what has me leaning towards Suzy Cube is that you can just like hop in and like it feels like it controls like how I would expect it to.
Yeah, you don't even have to think about it.
Which Grim Valor to me is like
there's a learning curve to figuring out how to
good, do but yeah, like you would like you couldn't just hand it to someone. You'd have to be like, all right, yeah, like here's the deal, like here's what this button does, like your dash move, this button does you know, your other stuff and
everything. I would else, feel so. How would you feel about doing like a gold, silver, bronze situation with we go Audemars, Suzy Cube, Grim Valor, and then the rest can be the honorable mentions of our contenders.
So you're saying three games of the year?
No, just we've done that before, I think, first, second, third sort of thing.
I guess I'm fine with that. I just don't know what you call them.
Gold, silver, and bronze.
game of the year gold.
First runner-up, second runner-up. I think that's how they do it in, like, you know, races and stuff.
Oh, yeah, we could.
We could do that, and then everything else just fills out a list of heavy contenders.
Yeah, all right, yeah, that sounds.
How do you feel about that?
That sounds good.
Because I feel like, gosh, I love watching you play Suzy Cube and just reminding myself of how much fun I had playing through it when it came out earlier this year. You can make a really good argument for this being the game of the year. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we got it settled.
I like that order. That feels right in my gut.
Yeah, I might actually call them something different when I get around to writing the post. If first runner up and second runner up feels weird, but I think we're settled on the list. And
well, if you had to, you said it was a coin flip, Suzy Cube and Grim Valor.
Yeah, but you know, after kind of like considering the controls between the two, yeah. Like I think that Suzy Cube wins out just because of like no virtual buttons.
Yeah. I remember the year we picked Landsliders as our game of the year, which was quite a controversy. And our runner-up then was Implosion, which was like a super hardcore action title that had virtual buttons and stuff like that. And I remember talking about it and going back and forth, and the ultimate deciding factor was that Landsliders was so touchscreen, you know, made for touchscreen and so mobile-y, yeah. Whereas Implosion felt like it was just a console game that was put on mobile and worked well on mobile.
Yeah, I feel like you can make that argument with Grim Valor and that, like, all right, yeah, yeah. It launched on mobile and it's really good on mobile, but, like, this arguably might play better as, like, an Xbox game.
It's really a traditional style of game. But I guess, I mean, you could kind of say the same thing about Odmar and Suzy Cube, too. I mean, those are two types of platformers that appeared on other consoles, so...
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's what makes it tricky. Like three platformers is like splitting hairs as to like which is the better one and why. And I really think it just comes down to controls and presentation.
Totally. I think if we do three, then I feel like it's got something for everybody because I feel like Odmar is like probably the most approachable because even you know people that don't game a whole lot are more familiar with like Super Mario Brothers and 2D platforming and stuff like that. Suzy Cube, I feel like, is a little bit added difficulty just by being a 3D platformer, but still not like crazy or anything. And then yeah. Grim Valor, I feel like, is more like the hardcore gamers type of game that just does everything right, but definitely has more of a learning curve to it and is more complex, but still could have, you know, broad appeal. So...
Yeah,
that's kind of why I like the
one. No, I completely agree. I like the ordering. We'll figure out what to call them.
Sweet.
And I think we got our stuff in the books. So,
I feel good about that.
Yeah. So thanks a ton for listening to or watching this week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show. Sorry about the video issues. I've been trying to figure that out. I don't know if it's like a video driver thing or. Whatever else, trust me, it annoys me 100 times more than it might annoy you watching. So, with that being said, if you've been following Touch Arcade for a while, or you know you're kind of new and you feel like you've gotten any value out of the site this year, we'd really appreciate it if you would check out our Patreon at patreon.com/TouchArcade, or do your Amazon shopping at toucharcade.com/Amazon, so we can get a tiny referral cut of the stuff that you buy. I would really appreciate it. Apple kind of threw us for a loop this year when they nuked the affiliate program, which has led to Patreon and Amazon being like the primary drivers of Touch Arcade, which sort of sucks, but it is what it is. So keep on keeping on. But and again, we'd appreciate it if you leave us iTunes reviews or send us emails at podcast@toucharcade.com. But with that out of the way, thank you very much for sticking with us through 2018. I hope everyone has a happy and safe new year, and we will catch you next week on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show.